Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, still fighting this head cold. Welcome to Education Talk Radio today, all part of our American Consortium for Equity and Education over at ace-ed.org. And it's a pleasure to have you here with us today, what's promising to be an excellent program. I've got a very special guest from my good friends at AASA, the School Superintendents Association. They have hooked me up with Emily Oster, Dr. Oster, who's a professor of economics, of all things, at Brown University. We're going to talk about data and the first national COVID-19 school response dashboard. That is a project, all right, of AASA, again, the School Superintendents Association, National Association of Elementary School Principals, Secondary School Principals, and a company called Qualtrics. Okay, we'll find out all about what they do, but that's an economics data company, and Emily will explain that a lot better. But we're going to talk about the context of data, so that you as educators, and in particular superintendents, school boards, policymakers, can understand what's going on out there with COVID and how it's affecting schools. A lot of the information we have is anecdotal, and that's fine, but we need data, and that's what this show is going to be about. So I'll bring Emily on in just a second. As mentioned, Education Talk Radio is part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. All right, and please go over there. All pre-K-12 educators and those involved in education are invited to join our consortium for free. It's a place where the industry and educators in pre-K-12 get together to try to find the solutions to the equity situation out there, all right? And we're doing a good job. I'm very proud of what we're doing. Our magazine is over there. That's called Equity in Access. It's an online journal. If you haven't seen it, you'll really enjoy it. Flip through. It's all free over at ace-ed.org, and you'll see a big icon for Education Talk Radio podcast, and it's there where you can listen to our shows and go to our archive shows, et cetera, et cetera. So please do that, ace-ed.org. We're going to tweet the show out at EduTalk Radio, also on LinkedIn at Larry Jacobs, that's me, and on Facebook at Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio if you wish to follow us at any of those places. And now, and a big thanks to Jimmy Minicello over at AASA who helped me put this show together. And now here is the amazing, the one and only Dr. Emily Oster from Brown University. Hi, Emily. I'm Larry.
Hi, Larry. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you kidding me? My pleasure. So what's an economics professor doing talking about education? I don't get that. Go ahead. Tell me. I'm only
you
kidding.
Know,
I do get it. I do get it, but I want you to explain it to everybody.
So I am, as you say, an economics professor, and oddly, I'm not even an economics professor who does education. Mostly I work on health,
but I do
a lot of writing for parents and about parenting, and when the pandemic started, I started writing a lot about, you know, risks for kids and COVID and trying to help people navigate things like, you know, can my little kids go back to preschool, to childcare? And that kind of morphed into sort of thinking about schools and thinking about, you know, what we needed to do to try to help schools understand the COVID context, how they help them open safely. And I was sort of lucky enough to connect up with the Superintendent's Association and the principals and Qualtrics to try to build something so we could, you know, try to make some progress on that.
Right, and it's great stuff, by the way. And I used the word before. I was reading through a lot of the stuff that Jimmy sent me from over there. And really, the whole we get information, be it anecdotal, be it quantitative data, but we need it in context. And I think that's what this whole thing, this national COVID-19 school dashboard, if I can use, is that a good word? It puts it all into context. Yep.
Yeah, that's the word we keep using also, is that, you know, there's a lot of kind of talk around schools. Oh, there's a case here, there's a case there. You know, this person has, you know, we think there's an outbreak here. There are a few, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. But what we really need to understand is, you know, like how many kids are in school. And
exactly.
And we think about cases, we got to think about how many kids. But also we need to understand all the other stuff that's going on, like how are schools opening? you know, are they opening hybrid? Are they opening remote? Like, what different strategies are schools using? Are they requiring masks? Like, all of this stuff is super important for understanding this, and it's just missing from a lot of the dialogue.
Oh, it sure is, because we hear, and I'll use the example that's in the article you wrote for the New York Times, which I'll talk about in a second. But if a school has 50 kids and 35 of them have COVID positive, that's bad, okay? But if a school has 5,000 kids and 35 of them have COVID positive, that's a whole different statistic. And that's what we have to look at, again, the context, all right? It's just amazing. By the way, I want to give you a plug. Emily is the author of a book, because she's really amazing, Emily, called Crib Sheet. I love this. A data-driven guide to better and more relaxed parenting from birth to preschool. Crib Sheet. When did you write that?
That came out in 2019.
Wow.
So,
you are a busy economics professor.
Busy.
My economics professor in college wasn't that good. All I remember is guns and butter and supply and demand.
Guns and butter that's one of our best examples. You know, don't knock it. We love that example. It's our favorite.
I love guns and butter. Actually, guns and butter was the problem in 2007 with the war in Iraq versus that. That's exactly what it was guns
that's what
and
it was.
Butter.
Good thing you took
my
class.
And I was at a friend's house for dinner the other night. They actually had their old, from the 1960s, their Paul Samuelson textbook from college.
Nice. That's
there
amazing.
There you go. What can
I
tell you?
It hasn't changed as much as you would think.
Right, and every teacher who's ever been through college knows that book, et cetera. But let's get back to this, and I think it's great. By the way, you're at Brown. Are you all remote at Brown? What's going on in Providence?
We're actually so Brown, just yesterday was the first day we had some in-person classes. So we have some small in-person classes. A lot of our students are back. We're testing pretty aggressively. And actually, the state of Rhode Island, most of the K-12 is back also.
Yeah, I know. I did a show yesterday with Cranston, Rhode Island, an element, mm-hmm. beautiful, wonderful elementary school there. And they have their K through 2 back now for 3 weeks, and grades 4, 5, and 6 at this particular elementary school, I'm sure throughout the whole city, is coming back today. So I know Rhode Island's on top of things. But it's so little. It's so cute. They can do whatever they want. It's simple. I live in Maine.
Well,
I can do
have
that. I live in Maine.
Out. Yes.
Yeah,
no, it's true. I mean, you definitely benefit from the size here, because, you know, I think they've been really centralized in a way that, like, if you're Texas, you can't, you know, you can't have a single, you know, testing stream for all of Texas. So
exactly. Okay. And good old Rhode Island. I do love it. The smallest state. And you know this, Emily, before we get in with the longest name. You remember the old name of Long Island?
Yeah, Rhode Island. The state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. Yeah, I think we've gotten
wrong.
Rid of the last part.
I got you.
Is that wrong?
Oh, God, I got you. This was great. Okay. The Commonwealth. The Commonwealth,
Commonwealth
of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. Right.
Even longer.
And that was up.
Even
that was
longer.
Up until just a few years ago. Okay, this is great. I actually got the professor. I'm smart.
Got the professor.
This is unbelievable. All right. Okay. By the way, your article it's excellent. Was it in New York Times, I believe, on September 28th. Congratulations on that. That's a big
Thank
deal.
You.
Okay. And it's really a great article that puts what you guys are doing in front of the eyes of literally millions of people who need to know what's going on. So I really appreciate that. Okay. Talk about the data. And this is the word we use a lot, and people are scared of it. But we need data. And a lot of education formerly was based on anecdotal information. Okay. Susie might have flunked that test, but she's a good student. I'll give her a B. Okay. That's the kind of the way we work. But the schools need data, okay? And just talk about how you got the data and what we're trying to measure here. Go ahead.
Yeah, so
Oster.
So the sort
the amazing,
of effort
the amazing
here,
Emily Oster. Go ahead.
So the big sort of effort here is we kind of collect the data in two pieces. So we've started by coming to schools or districts and asking for some what we're calling baseline data about their schools. So how are you opening? You know, are you opening in person or remote? How many kids do you have enrolled? How many kids do you have in person? How many staff do you have in person? I'm trying to understand, like, for some places, the staff are in person, the students are not. So getting those kind of information. If they're hybrid, asking, you know, do you have all the kids in the same number of days alternating, or some grades there more? And then asking about, like, mitigation. So are you requiring masks? Are you distancing at 6 feet? Are you distancing at 3 feet? What are you doing about, you know, like, group sizes? So just some basic stuff about mitigation things. So, you know, that is, you know, this is evidence, this is data, like, information that districts have, although I think, you know, one of the things we want to acknowledge is, like, we really are tremendously grateful for the districts that have been sharing this, because it is a bit of a lift to, like, together for, for our schools. And so I feel like we've been really lucky that, you know, districts have been willing to kind of lean in and say, okay, I'm going to have somebody go, like, collect this information for you and send it back. But then, you know, once we have that kind of baseline, then it's much easier for us to sort of do the next step, right? So then we come back every other week to the same schools and we tell them, look, here, you know, here's what you told us about your in-person enrollment and your staffing. And, you know, just, you know, can you just confirm this is about right? And how many COVID cases did you have? And that is actually, I think, that's something a lot of schools already know, and a lot of districts are collecting for other reasons, you know, so they can kind of be aware of what's going on. And so then we take all that data in and we, I don't know, you know, clean it up isn't the right word, but we make sure it's in the right cells. And then we put it up in this dashboard. Yeah. And so I think, a huge thing for us was, you know, saying, we're not going to approach this like a research project and, like, you know, say, okay, you know, in 2022, you can have the evidence. We're going to literally put it up, like, you know, we get in the data and at the end of the week, it posts. So even though this project really started in August, there's already, like, some data up and some things you can filter around with the dashboard. And so I think that was our big, that's our big push. And I think we're hoping to just keep growing the sample, which will let us, you know, think more broadly about other, what's going on.
I think it's just great. And so far, again, it started in August, all right? And now we are in October. It's October 6th today as we're doing this show. Have you gotten a good cross-section? And I'm asking that, again, it's context. Because if all the answers are coming from the Northeast, you're not getting the South and the Midwest in there. So how are we doing in terms of a cross-section, middle school, high school, elementary school, across the country, et cetera? How are we doing
there? Yeah, I think we're pretty good. So I think we have data from almost every state. I'm looking at our map, which is what is the data we have in the last 2 weeks, and we're missing Iowa, Alabama, and West Virginia. But everybody else, so if anyone's listening from there, I need you to enter my data, please. But you know, we're getting, I think, a pretty good cross section of places. We have, you know, both district schools. And we have private schools. So we've actually been pushing out to private and parochial schools also, because there are a lot of places where those are the main schools that are open. And so we're trying to sort of learn from that. We've got elementary, middle, high school. You can actually filter the data that way. So you can sort of say, you know, well, I want to see what's going on in, you know, places with elementary schools and in middle schools. And so I think we're starting to get, in this, you know, last 2 week period, we have a bit over 1,000 schools, which is, you know, all in about 550,000 enrolled kids, about almost 200,000 of them are in person. So, you know, we're making some progress.
You are making some progress. And, of course, all this will grow, okay, over the course of time. Excuse me, the next few months. God, excuse me, I'm awfully sorry. All right. Let me ask, okay, I think, if I'm reading what I'm learning about this, a school can participate. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be district-wide. It can be a school, all right? How do they tell you they want to participate?
Yeah, so we've got a website called just covidschooldashboard.com, very simple. And if you go there, you can see some kind of top level stuff about the dashboard, and then you can also see where to enroll either as a school or a district. And so we're very happy to take enrollments from either, you know, individual schools or to kind of pull in the whole district. And then we have been working with the district to try to make the data collection as easy as possible for them. You know, sending an Excel doc, like, that you can kind of share around and get the information from everybody. So that's been working. I think that's been working pretty well.
Cool. Well, I'm just going over to that website, COVID School Dashboard. Oh, this is great. Okay, I hadn't seen that .com, and it'll tell you everything you need to know. And it's real.
Yeah.
How, you know, I'm sure you've looked. What's the picture right now? What are we learning from all this? What do we know from all this?
So I think there's a couple of things. I think, you know, one is the rates that we're seeing, I think, are probably a bit lower than people thought. So if you sort of look at, like, the most recent week, the confirmed case rate in students is about 0.13%. So to sort of give you 0.13. A context, that's like – so that says basically in a school of 1,000 kids, you'd expect about 1.3 cases over 2 weeks. So, you know, that's a pretty low number.
Low. Yeah, it's great. That's good news. Good news.
It's good news. The staff rate is a little bit higher than that, but actually not too much higher. So it's about 0.2%. And then we are seeing, you know, we're sort of starting to see, to learn a little bit about variation across space. So, like, not surprisingly, I think we're seeing a bit, just working on this morning, trying to make some maps to write something. But we're seeing, for example, you know, rates are a bit higher in states where there are regions where there's more COVID at the moment. So
right, of course.
We're sort
that
of seeing, we're seeing that. Yep. We're seeing lower rates in private schools.
Are we seeing a difference
schools.
Between elementary schools and high schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing lower rates in elementary schools than in high schools. I would say that,
well,
you know, and again, I think that's not, that's kind of what we expect, but it's sort of nice to see it there, like there in the data.
Yeah, it really truly is. I got to tell you, it's nice to know, and those low numbers make me feel a little bit better about things. I think they're going to make a lot of teachers feel better about things. And also, and you're interested in this as well, a lot of parents feel better about things.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
course,
I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's like a tremendous amount of fear among people, and you know, there are reasons that we want to be careful and thoughtful about return, but we also don't want to be driven by fear that is not right. And I think there are definitely parents and teachers who really, you know, have kind of in their mind like when we go back to school, you know, there'll be the rates will be 20% or something, and that's just not really what we're seeing in the data. They're really quite low.
Well, it's amazing. So. Maybe we're doing everything right. Who knows, right? It sounds good to me. Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, most
all right?
of,
I wish it was
so
zero.
Most
but it
of
was
the schools yeah, here are, yeah. yeah, most of the schools here are masking, are doing masks and some symptom checking. And so, you know, that's kind of most, like the most common mitigation strategy we see is a staff and student masks.
Yeah, it's really important. I know there's a political side to the mask, but from what I've been hearing, that's not flying over into schools because parents, so they may have one attitude about masks themselves. They do care about their kids, and there's not a lot of arguing going on about the masks at school, which is something to be said. We got to get move, you know, away from the politics of the situation, which doesn't really matter that much, to tell you the truth. Okay, in the long term of what we're trying to accomplish here, you know. You work for Brown, right? You're a Brown professor. Do you know who set up the thing between AASA and NAESP and ASSP? But this is an AASA show. All these letters. Pardon me for doing that. And Qualtrics the company. Did you know them? How did AASA and Qualtrics find Emily Oster? Maybe that's the question.
Yeah. So really, what happened is I got connected, in separate threads with both of them. So there's a guy named John Bailey at AEI who knew both me and Noel at AASA. And he put us in touch. I don't know if you know Noel at all, but she's like
I don't,
amazing.
I don't think. What's your last name? What's your last name?
Ng. NG.
No, I don't think I know Noel.
Anyway, so she's great. I tried to get her to come here, but she's in Ohio, like pitching something to them.
She's always
not
welcome.
In Ohio.
She's always
virtually.
Welcome. And by
yes.
the way, so are
you should
you.
Have her on. She's awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to. Wait a minute. Let me say that because I know he's listening. Jimmy Minicello, press person for AASA. Did you hear that? That's all I have to say. He just
Jimmy.
Heard.
Let's
okay.
get Noel on.
Jimmy, come on. Yeah, get with the program. So, okay, moving right along.
So I was connected with her and she kind of knows all of the other school people and was like, okay, great. Let's like bring in the principals association to kind of push this out. And so that's kind of one piece of it is getting it out to schools. And of course the other piece is building the like infrastructure to have this dashboard, to have the survey run. And at the same time, like as I was being connected to her, Qualtrics reached out and said, look, you know, this is kind of like, we think this is really important and we have this infrastructure to do this. Can we help you? And I think that of course, none of us quite realized the size of this lift when we started doing it. And so I think I definitely the team at Qualtrics was working a lot. But you know, we got it up. So it was just like kind of a happy accident. I don't know quite why I'm the center of it, or not the center, but why I'm the linchpin. But there you go.
Well, I can help you with that, because you're an incredibly bright professor of economics at Brown University. I could probably help you with that.
Yeah, I guess I have.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're an extremely intelligent person, an excellent writer, and you're very articulate. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah. No. It's nice. Yeah. I'm enjoying this. This is a good.
That is why you are the linchpin of this, and don't have any doubts about that. Okay. It's really something important. Are you using other sources, okay, at all? I don't know. Is it all just what the schools are reporting, or are you looking to other sources as well?
Yeah, this is a good question, something we're talking about. I mean, so there are some other kind of dashboard approaches here that have taken, like, okay, let's go to news reports and let's go to, you know, and I think we don't want to do that, because I think we really want to be focused on kind of what is being reported by the schools. But there are now a number of states that have their own, like, sort of data collection system, mostly around just counting cases. So I think for the most part, the states are not doing this kind of baseline data collection that we're doing. But I think we are hoping that we may be able to partner in some cases and sort of collect the baseline data, but then pull in the COVID cases from what the state is already doing. And I think that is a way to make it, you know, a bit easier to for districts and to kind of pull in. So that's something where that's kind of one of the avenues that that we're working on at the moment.
It's really something. I mean, it really is, to get this real data in mind. And I have to say something else, and you can walk this over to the education school, okay? We have to make sure that educators understand data and how to use it, okay? And I was a teacher trained many years ago, but the word data never came up, okay? Except on a Friday night, do I have a data, or am I going to go single? Okay, that's the only time it ever came up. All right, but data is key. All right, and it's key to learning. Not only to COVID, it's key to learning. Okay, we have to understand how to read it. And on that note, I have a question for you, Dr. Roster. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm on Qualtrics on the website, and it says here, this is the category: families given a choice. Given a choice between in-person school or remote learning. That's the category.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's 91% yes, and 9% no. But that's not a yes or no question, is it?
It probably should say were families. This is it's fair. I'll edit it. Thank you, Larry.
Am I right?
This is a question.
Let me make the point. I'm an idiot when it comes to economics. I can tell you this point blank. I'm not ashamed of it. An idiot when it comes to economics. But that's not a yes or no question.
No, it's not. I agree. It should be were families given a choice. This is a question we asked to schools that have an in-person component. Basically, or the schools that were like full-time in-person, like, did you let families choose? Whether they wanted to be in almost every place is letting families choose and saying, you know, look, if, you know, even if we're going to have in-person school, if you don't feel like that's comfortable for your kid, then you can, then you should be able to choose.
So 91% of families are saying they had a choice. Am I correct?
No, these
is
are,
the way to
these
read
are
it?
Schools. These are questions to schools. So this is 91% of schools are saying that they gave families a choice.
Ah, I see. Okay, got it. And that's good. And every school should give families a choice. That's terrible.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised that there were, in some sense, like, it's almost everybody, but I'm surprised anybody would say that families didn't have a choice. I don't know.
That's very, very odd. I guess some of the big school districts, if I remember now, they just said, we're not starting, period, end of discussion, it's all remote.
Yeah, so the remote stuff, I think that we may be picking up some of that, places that are sort of reading that question a little bit differently.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the question needs to be re-editing, but I really didn't understand that one. Okay.
Really interesting. You know, Larry, you could be on this team, because actually we just had that same discussion on Slack the other day that wasn't a very good graph. So I should bring you on. I'm going to put you on the Slack.
Well,
channel.
Thank you. I accept.
You know.
If you want somebody to look at it from a totally lay point of view, I'm your guy.
Oh, I think that would be excellent.
I'm your guy. Thank you. That is a great compliment. And if you could send that to my former economics professor from 35 years ago, okay, I would really appreciate that. Okay, so that he knows something sunk in. Okay, but where'd you go to school? I have to ask Emily. Where'd you become interested in economics?
I went to Harvard, which is where I for undergrad and grad school.
Are you a New
Haven? I'm from Connecticut. Yeah. From New Haven,
okay,
Connecticut.
Yeah, and are there? I want to ask this question. And are there a lot of women in economics?
No, not too many.
Yet women are mostly responsible for the households of the world.
That is true.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean it's something really to think about. Okay, and that's one of the occupations that should have more. Well, everyone should be, but that definitely should be, without question.
No,
There you go.
Okay. I agree.
How interesting! It's unbelievable. Did you teach anywhere besides Brown?
I used to teach at the University of Chicago. That was what I did before.
Where'd you live in Chicago?
I lived in Hyde Park for a while, and then in an area called Bucktown. So.
I know Bucktown. I lived in Chicago for 13 years. I was on the north side, right by Loyola in Rogers Park.
Ah, nice. I like that area, Rogers Park is great.
Yeah, it is indeed. Okay, I loved it there. This is amazing, the work you're doing. Are you going to continue doing this through the school year?
Yeah, I think we will. I think that we there are a couple of directions that we want to keep going here. So one is that actually, we've realized that for some big school districts, they have their own dashboards that they can show people. But for most small school districts, it's actually pretty hard to like stand up your own dashboard, even though, maybe they would like a way to either visualize what's going on for themselves or even to kind of communicate out to the district. So I think the next step in this, even maybe in the next few weeks, is we're actually going to, for districts and schools that are enrolled, we're actually going to build custom dashboards. So basically, if you're giving us your data, the kind of reward for that will be that, you'll get like a little dashboard like this that's like your school or your district and your schools. And so that's one piece. And then I just think, as we move into the cold and flu season and as we, move through the year, I think it will be really valuable to kind of keep track of this stuff and figure out what's going on and, try to figure out if we're seeing an outbreak, what's going on in those schools. Is there any way we can figure out how to help people open more safely? So,
I think we're in it. And by the way, let me just say on that note, cold and flu season is coming, and people still have the God-given right to get sick with other things besides COVID. Is not COVID. I just want to make that point perfectly clear to everybody. I'm curious, though, you just said something that struck me, and I meant to ask you this, all right? Why, in your opinion, and in the opinion of AASA and the other groups, NAESP and ASSP, why do we need the national picture? Most people are concerned about their particular school district. So my point is that this goes beyond the parent and the superintendent, okay? What do you see as the great need for the national picture, Dr. Osler?
I think that one big thing is that, we can learn that places that are not yet open can learn from places that are. So one of the sort of odd aspects of this reopening that is that actually we've seen a lot of school openings in places with fairly high COVID rates and less school openings in some ways in places with lower rates, just sort of like and so you might say, well, from a public health standpoint, that's a little complicated. But from a learning standpoint, it means, there actually is a lot of opportunity for like a place like Massachusetts, where basically none of the public schools are in person. There's an opportunity for them to learn from, of course, maybe from Rhode Island, but even from a place like Georgia or, Tennessee, where they've opened schools in and sort of to see what happens. And I think if we limit this so narrowly to right around, we may get a situation where it's like, well, how would I know if I should open the district public schools in Worcester, Massachusetts, because none of the districts are around me are open. But you say, okay, well, if you're willing to like learn a little bit from elsewhere, if we have the national picture, we can do that better. So I think that was really important. That was like a big step for us. Yeah.
And one other thing, let's just say I'm a superintendent of a district with a rural district with 6,000 kids in it. I'm just making that up. All right.
Yeah.
Two elementaries, two middle schools, and a high school. Again, making it up. All right. Am I able to use the dashboard and filter that information and then get a national picture of what that picture of a school would look like?
Not really. So what you can do at the moment, we can let you. I mean, this is the kind of thing we can build in. It's sort of an interesting. Again, this is why we need you on the team.
I'd be thrilled.
You can filter by like location type. So you can filter rural versus urban. So that's like, you know, that filter you can do. But this thing, and you can filter, you know, rural district public schools, for example. But the thing about this sort of like size of the school, we haven't really pulled in. And also kind of sort of what you're asking, which is like, what about districts that are like mine? I think that's something that we're talking a lot about in the context of these individualized dashboards, which is like, what is the comparison group you'd like to see? If you had sort of your district and the rest of your state, what's kind of one other comparison? And I was thinking, you know, one of the things is kind of places that are like me in the sense of sort of sharing some of these kind of basic structures. So I think that's something we can hopefully make some progress on.
And again, I want to congratulate you because data is everything, all right? And for many, many years, it was ignored for the most part because it's hard to understand. And we need people like you to put it out there simply so we can all understand it. It gives us the information and the picture we need. Emily, you're something else. I got to tell you, thank you for being with us today.
Thank
I really
you so much for having
this.
Me. I really, really appreciate it, Larry.
It was my pleasure indeed. Come back anytime you have more information. You're always welcome here. Thank you, Dr. Oster.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Emily Oster, everybody, who's a professor of economics, okay, at Brown University, okay? And, what can I say? This is the kind of information we need right across the board all the time, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have to shoot in the dark, all right? We can learn. So it's great stuff. AASA, Jimmy, thank you so much for putting this together along with our friends over at NASSP, the Secondary School Principals Group, Qualtrics, okay, the company, and NAESP, Earl Frank's group of elementary school principals. Thank you all very, very much. All right, we're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org under Education Talk Radio Podcast. While you're over there, enjoy our magazine, all right, which is called Equity and Access. And please join our consortium, which is all about equity pre-K-12, and it's free to pre-K-12 educators. My name's Larry Jacobs. Okay, I really appreciate it. This is Education Talk Radio, a part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And thanks so much for listening today. And let's carry what Emily said. Let's all be safe out there.